Blog Talk Radio. Betrayal Trauma Radio. Help for partners after sexual betrayal. Your source for healing. Your host, Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, is here to help you navigate through the crisis of finding out that your partner is a sex addict. She is APSATS trained, so she knows that you're likely facing the greatest trauma of your life. Carol the Coach is here to help you find safety in an unsafe situation. Now, here is your host, Carol the Coach.
Well, thank you. Hi, everybody. Carol the Coach here. And I am talking today about how do you recover your coupleship when truly you probably believe this is to be the worst thing that has ever happened to you. Partner betrayal is unquestionably such a deep betrayal because it affects the relationship in a way where you thought when you got married, when you created that sacred bond, that that person was going to have your back forever and always. Now, maybe you're not married to the sex addict. Maybe you're in a committed relationship. I work with people that are dating sex addicts, and they're hanging in there, and they're like, should I stay? Well, there's a lot of factors that play into that. Truly, each and every case is different. But I know to be true, and what I teach the partners that I work with to believe is, it is imperative that you see somebody making the needed changes. He's got to walk a talk. And the talk has to be recovery. You know, you cannot continue to be with somebody who isn't going to work on this addiction, because this is by far, I promise you, I'm a certified sex addiction therapist. This is the worst addiction that you can have. And you can't fight it by itself. You've got to be able to have a program that supports the addict, a program with other men who've been there, done that, and know what works and what doesn't. You know, I say there are these 10 recovery tools. And those tools, at least 8 out of the 10, should be utilized at all times from the standpoint of an addict. And they are. An addict in recovery should be attending meetings. Maybe they're 12-step meetings like Sex Addicts Anonymous or Sexaholics Anonymous. That's SAA or SA for short. Maybe they're going to Every Man's Battle and they're, you know, doing breakout sessions with the, you know, other men and getting to know them and calling each other. You know, one of the fun things that I was talking with a sex addict today, and he says, you know what, we text each other every day. And from time to time, we do a roll call. And a roll call is when you text your group and you say, okay, everybody check in. How many days you got clean? What are you struggling with? And what would you like to be better? So they're creating that fellowship. So going to meetings, and that might be Recovery Nation. That's an online meeting group that is recovery coaching. They may be doing online groups, 12-step groups, where they can get the help they need because they don't have meetings in their town. So they do coaching groups, actually 12-step groups, via phone or via Zoom or via Skype, you know. They have to find something that works. They cannot do it by themselves. And then they have to have a mentor, a guide, or a sponsor, somebody wiser who's been in the program a long time and has good, clean sobriety. Because they need to be talking to that man at least once a week. You know, now they can meet with him face-to-face or they can talk with him over the phone, but they need that contact. And then they need to be doing their work. You know, all those groups that I mentioned have recovery readings specifically for them. With SAA, it's the green book. With SA, it's the white book. With Every Man's Battle, it's their book. With Smart Recovery, it's they have a workbook. So they need to be reading that information. And if they're in a 12-step group, they need to be doing the 12-step work. That's where the real transformation comes. That's when you see changes. You see, you know, you get through your anger and your resentment and your anxiety and your character flaws, and you figure out, what is it that I need to do to make my life better? And so that's where, again, they're walking their talk, they're working diligently on what they need to get healthy. And then that last one of the five is fellowship. They have a group of people that they really can believe in, that they can call day or night. You know, one of the things I know in working with partners and addicts is that I can't be with you 24/7. You've got to develop a fellowship of, especially for partners, of women that you know that you can trust, that gets you, that gets a circumstance, that aren't going to judge, and they're going to be there for you to hold you responsible, that will help you hold your feelings when you're feeling sad, angry, anxious. Fellowship is so important, and that's what the guys need too. The next five, I really believe that a sex addict needs to go to a specialist. Now, you heard me say I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist, and there are several different organizations that train sex therapists. ITAP, I-I-T-A-P, that's Patrick Carnes Group, that's who I'm trained by. SASH, the Sexual Advancement for Sexual Health, they have a program. So find somebody who can prove that they are certified, that they've gone through the training, so that you get somebody who isn't bumbling around trying to figure out what is going on with this guy. I really believe in sex addict groups. You know, those are therapy groups where they can talk. You know, in 12-step meetings, oftentimes they can't talk. They have to bring up a topic and everybody talks about that topic. And that is very important and very helpful. But I love my therapy groups because these guys can get on it. They can get on each other. They can support each other. They absolutely know and hold each other accountable for stinking thinking. And then the next tool that a sex addict needs is he needs to be able to do separate recovery reading and or spiritual reading. And what I mean by that is, yeah, great if you're reading your green book or your white book, but you need to understand this sex addiction. You need to know you can't do it on your own. You need to understand how it affects the brain. You need to know whether there's trauma in your childhood. So many sex addicts have had some sort of trauma occur that they need to work out. Then the next two tools are actually one, praying or meditating. When you pray or meditate, you get quiet. And sex addicts need to get quiet so that they better understand what is it that they need. So praying and meditating are important. If you're an atheist, you know, then you're going to do the meditative route. Whenever we get quiet, our intuition takes over. As partners, I know you questioned your intuition because you thought, how could this have happened to me? As an addict, you have not relied on your intuition because you've been too driven by your compulsion. So that's why addicts need to be able to pray and or meditate. And the last one is for them to hold them accountable, but it's really also for the partner. And that is the addict needs to utilize every resource available to build trust. Maybe it's a GPS. Maybe it's an open passcode system so that you have passwords and passcodes for everything. Maybe you do a disclosure. You know, when we work with couples, we really advise for them to go through a disclosure process so that she gets to know everything. I know as an addict, he's afraid to hurt her any further. But one of the things we really believe is that partners deserve the truth. Now, if they don't want a disclosure, that's okay too. So one thing that I believe in is polygraph tests, regular polygraph tests, so that the partner can know that the addict is in good recovery. And it helps the addict make better choices because they think, do I really want to look at pornography if I know I'm getting tested in 2 weeks? It'll set her off. It'll send her a couple ship places I don't want it to be. And you know what? I think I'm going to pass on this. So accountability tools like GPS and open passwords, covenant eyes, all sort of filters and polygraphs really can make the difference. So those are the 10 tools. I hope you got them down. You can always listen to the show again and know that it's in the first 15 minutes. Because truly, one thing that I absolutely believe is that when somebody's working a good recovery program, wow, you can see that they're different. I had a man today who said, Carol, it is just absolutely easier not to lie and to live my life right now that I am working this out in my recovery and with my wife. Now, I was talking to a woman this week who was really traumatized because her husband had been to prostitutes. And unfortunately, they had exchanged sexual acts that included oral sex. And that was very traumatizing to her. You know, she could understand, she didn't like it, but she understood why he would receive the benefit of a sexual act. But by virtue of the fact that he performed that on her, it made no sense to her, and it felt really relational. And she was really triggered, and she was really traumatized. And so, first and foremost, I work with partners to really help them to manage those triggers and not to go to that dark place where they don't feel worthy. You know, APSAP is an organization that's been devoted to helping partners find safety in an unsafe situation. It's the Association for Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. It's clinicians and coaches that have been trained to help you to regulate your emotions, to help you to get back on your feet and restore your own sense of self, as well as perhaps your sense of coupleship, your sense of family, your sense of spirituality. I mean, all these things suffer incredibly when there's been a betrayal. And APSAP sponsors this radio show. They want you to know that this is another resource that you can have every single week. If you're listening to this show, maybe you just Googled it for the first time, you can actually get us on Stitcher and iTunes and subscribe for free, and then every show is downloaded every week. And then put it in your MP3 player or listen to it when you're doing your Quicken. It's nice to be able to become educated about one of the toughest situations of your life. And APSAP trains incredible coaches and clinicians. So you go to their website, that's APSATS.org, and then you find out who's available in your area that has partner-sensitive training and knows how to help you restore your own sense of self, how to find safety and stabilization, how to grieve the loss and the relationship you thought you had, and then how to reconstruct a new relationship, perhaps for the coupleship, at least for yourself. So we're really the only training organization specifically designated to help partners. And, you know, I'm so proud to be a part of them, because most of the people that work for AppSats has had some personal experience. They've been through a part of this, and they've made it their mission to help you feel better. And that's not everybody. That's, for instance, that's not me. I'm not a partner. But what I truly believe in is when you're working with a coach or a clinician that has been through it on some level, they get it. And when they go and get their education and certification, they're saying, I want to devote my life to making it easier for other people. Perhaps I didn't have the resources or the people around. And, you know, when they find that kind of purpose, then they have a real mission for their life. Now, I'm going to be talking to Coach Karen, who has lived through partner betrayal, and she has such an inspirational story. She has made her marriage work, I believe, of 36 years, and together they are making a difference in the lives of this community. So I wanted her to share her story with you and wanted her to share her wisdom, because she knows better than most what recovery tools are out there, what resources are out there. So, Coach Karen, welcome to Betrayal Trauma Radio.
Hi, Carol, and hi, everyone. Oh, I'm so honored and so grateful to be here and to share today.
Well, thank you so much. And am I right? Is it 36 years of marriage?
Yes, ma'am. It'll be 36 years August 1st.
Right, and congratulations on your new grandbaby.
Thank you. It's been a great week. Yep. It's
wonderful. It has. Now, can you share with our listening audience a little bit about your journey, what you went through, and how you overcame it?
Well, sure. And, you know, just when I called in, I only heard you talk a little bit about, you know, how maybe I didn't have what, you know, what I'm able to share with partners today. And that is so true. When I was going through my journey, I didn't have anyone for quite a while. I mean, it was like 5 years before everything, you know, hit the fan. And then when it did, it was, you know, it was, I just felt so alone. I didn't have a group for a while and didn't have a good therapist. But thankfully, I did find a wonderful therapist who happened to be ABSAT trained, newly trained at the time. And so I was able to benefit from a lot of that and find, you know, get well. And that's, I think that's where my biggest heart is for partners, you know, that are in the marriage, and this was me, and this is most of the partners I work alongside are in a place that I was, where their spouse is not in that place yet. They're not, you know, willing, or they're not broken yet, and they're not, they're still running, lying, hiding, cheating, or whatever they're doing. And so it's sort of like, okay, so now what? So I had to get well for me, because, you know, we get lost in that mess and all of the pain and, you know, wanting our marriage over losing ourselves in it, you know? So I just am such of a proponent of, you know, we need to get well, and that we need to find, you know, healthy, loving boundaries, and we need to find our worth again, and, you know, and protect our kids and show or be an example for our kids, you know, imperfect one, but, you know, life is going to throw us some things like this, and that, what are we going to do with it? And, you know, and that just to rediscover our worth and, you know, just really work on ourselves and our voice and our needs and our feelings and, you know, just dealing with all of that. And so that's what I'm honored to work and walk alongside partners every day with, that doing that. And, you know, and then if and when hopefully their spouse comes to a place where they've either got busted or they've come clean, if they come to the end of themselves or whatever that takes and is, that they are in a place that they, you know, together can start to begin to heal. And that's sort of what happened in my story. And I had been counseling. My husband actually I mean, I kind of make light of it these days, but like he had to get to the end of himself, he had to like jump all in, like he had to leave his family, you know, our six kids, and you know, to get to that place that was his rock bottom and the end of himself. But what that did for me as well, I hit my rock bottom, and I didn't know what I was going to do. We'd been married like 26 years at the time, and I just didn't know what life was going to be like without him, and how could I handle these six kids, and I wanted to die, and all these horrible things, and I'm in trauma, and didn't know it, and so I had to go on that healing journey. And then 2 years
and
later...
And can I ask you something, Karen?
Sure.
Because obviously that was 10 years ago, and when he really didn't know what he was going to do, and he was lost, and he left you, and or maybe you asked him to leave, I'm not sure.
No, he
left me. Remember,
goodbye.
He left you. And do you remember your core issue, your limiting belief that you had about yourself way back then after discovery? What was the worst thing you thought about that was about you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I had lots of them. But the biggest one that came out in counseling was I'm insignificant. It was like light bulbs, ding, 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 you know, I'm insignificant. So insignificant that my husband left me and didn't even give me a goodbye or a letter or a reason or that kind of thing. Plus, I'm not enough. Plus, I'm shameful. I'm unlovable. I mean, the list went on and on. And I didn't have a lot of childhood traumas like many. I had a pretty good upbringing, but I did notice when the insignificance came up that I did start to look into my past and noticed that I did have some of that. You know, there wasn't that safety to share emotional feelings and that kind of thing. And it was a lot of, you know, chin up, you're happy, that kind of thing. And so I did notice that, and I did start to do that work in myself and start to learn, you know, about myself, and that I was significant, and that I, you know, that I am enough, and it wasn't about me. I did start to get to that place where I realized it's not about me. And so, yeah, my heart, and for those women that are listening today, because I know that they're out there listening and their husband isn't in that place, but I think it's just pivotal that we need to do that work regardless of if our husband is in that place or not, because we need to get well for ourselves, and we need to grow, and we need to find support and validation and healing regardless. So, you know, that
well,
to say,
and so
but
here you were, you know, you discover what has gone on, and do you share what you discovered? I mean, do you tell people? I know you do a lot of presentations and a lot of groups. I mean, was it prostitution or multiple affairs or pornography or?
It was pornography addiction really off and on throughout our entire marriage, and that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never really looked at it that way because, you know, we just, when we first met, we were teenagers, and he came with a bunch of, you know, magazines with him. And then, you know, the internet came out, then came the porn, you know, on the internet. And there was always like lust going on with other women in front of me off and on, not always. It was really interesting because it'd be gone for a while. Like he'd kind of white knuckle it, I guess. And then it would come back. And then it'd be gone, and then it would come back. And then it took, you know, about 25 years in or 20 years in, I would say, and things just started to go awry. Like he was drinking and hanging on women in front of my face and, you know, just started to get really messy and really ugly. And then when I actually didn't discover, he actually dropped the bomb on me after thinking he had – and not to minimize the porn addiction only, but I thought he had only had that. He had gone to some strip clubs here and there and things, but the main issue was porn and lust. And then he dropped the bomb after he'd been out of the house that he had been unfaithful for a few years. So that was completely shocking to me and threw me into complete betrayal trauma.
Oh, 100%.
Yep.
And so... any of those feelings you had about the porn, feeling insignificant or not good enough, just had to have escalated when you found out that with most sexual addictions, the behaviors escalate and they get worse and worse and worse. And so obviously his affair or affairs you know, showed you that he was out of control, and you probably wondered, who the heck did I marry? What happened to us?
Oh, for sure. Yep, yep. And I didn't, you know, it was kind of like at that point, I was like, I didn't really know him, right? And then that's where, now that is where some of the healing stuff starts to come in, because he did finally admit that he was miserable and he was willing to work on our marriage. And now, mind you, I had been doing the work, right? So I was in a healthier place. I got to a place where I was going to be fine. I was going to make it with or without him. It wasn't based on my marriage any longer. And that, you know, I had healthy boundaries. He did not come back in the home. I did not let him back in the home for a year. And I, you know, I had 6 kids to protect, and I was in a place to start using my voice. And I still wasn't in a group yet, but I was getting, you know, wonderful counseling. And so that was, you know, beginning of my strength and using my voice and my needs. And then, of course, then the bomb hit. So then we were in this trauma crisis, and I'm not living with him. And I need, you know, I'm sure you talk about the push and pull. I need him. I don't want him. He's, you know, he's the cause of the pain, but then I need him.
Right.
So there were nights I needed him to stay over with me and hold me, because I was in terror. I mean, I was having night terrors. I couldn't eat, all of those things. And plus, publicly, people saw that we were reconciling for that whole previous year. And then he dropped that bomb. So then I felt shame, and I was scared, and I didn't know, I was afraid to tell anyone, because we were like in this whole new place of trauma. And so that was, I didn't have safe people. It was tough. It was really tough. But I believe that, you know, all of the things I've gone through have all been part of my training to help other partners. And that's why I feel so blessed, because I can say, wow, yep, I get it. I felt so alone. And, you know, and so definitely, but so what I think as far as healing together, once he did drop the bomb, it was kind of, he had been running the line and cheating for many, many, many years. And, you know, it also came out that he had been sexually abused and sexualized very, very early. And he had not told me those things. So, again, I did not know him. You know, like I was saying earlier, I really didn't know him. And he, you know, like you would say, sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. And he had that fear of being known and being truly authentic to what had happened in his life. And so together, I like to always say that we were broken together at that point. And that is where true healing can start to actually, you know, happen. It, when a couple are both in a place of that weakness and that humility and that vulnerability, and that's kind of what happened to us, and it happened organically. Now, I must say, it's not a pretty, you know, there's no pretty way to get through the healing. It's a process. It's a process of pain. You know, and of course, when a partner is in betrayal trauma, you know, the first thing we need is emotional safety, stability. And so that is sort of where he was being guided through our wonderful therapist, how to be there and help me through that and find that stability on top of my own recovery. And that's why I think it's so important that, you know, I was in my own recovery, and then I found a group, and then he got to his recovery, and he also found a group, and then together we began our recovery relationally. And so it's a lot of components. There were days we were 4 nights a week gone, you know,
right,
leaving
you
our
know,
kids.
Well, and you brought up an interesting point. One of the things that I do is that at times I will work with the partner and the sex addict, and believe it or not, the coupleship, and I will do that simultaneously. And so I'm wondering, did your therapist primarily work with you? Did he have his own therapist, or did she? And so when you said she worked with him, was that psychoeducation, or was that in therapy?
Well, okay, I was going to her before he came back, correct? Remember? So,
right.
So I was going along with her, and then she agreed to see him with me. And so, you know, and that was one of my boundaries, like, we need to go to counseling together, and I'll meet you there. And so he did. He did go to her. But mind you, I'm going backwards. This was a year before everything really went down and everything came out. Mm-hmm. So he was going, but he was all over the place. He was in that place that he wasn't broken, and he wasn't fully back, and he was still lying to me and all of those things. Little did I know. But he wasn't consistent, so she had to call him out on that and tell him that, you know what, if he's not going to come every week, she can't see him, and things like that. And then, but when he did come clean with everything, then he did have his own counselor, and I had my own counselor, and then together we were counseled by her. And then he also did some EMDR with her separately, and I did EMDR with her with those negative beliefs that I just shared.
Excellent.
And then our group.
Yeah, it's, you know, because so many partners wonder, can that be possible? Can somebody who's seen the addicts, you know, then do couples work? And, you know, it takes a trained, skilled therapist, but it is possible. And at what point did you end up getting into your own coaching group?
Well, I ended up, at the time, I didn't know of any coaching groups or any online groups. That was 7 years ago, almost 7 years ago. And so mm-hmm. I didn't know of any. So luckily, though, I found one at a church in Orange County, California, where we lived. And so, I mean, we drove 45 minutes to it. And there was a men's group and there was a wives group. And so that's what we did every Monday night. We drive down there together. And then, I want to reiterate, that's where some really beautiful things began to happen. We would drive to our group together, go separately into our groups, but we had that time and we were both mm-hmm. very humble and broken. And so we started to have real conversations and, you know, I'd cry and there was just something that started to, you know, transform in him as he began to get honest and, you know, and start to face some of his stuff and his childhood stuff and, you know, and started working on his traumas. And then I started to understand and have compassion for him. And I will, you know, never give that an excuse for a man to act out or, you know, sexually betray his wife. But it was an understanding. My husband had 5 fathers that were all alcoholics. He was abandoned, rejected. You know, he didn't have the love that I came from. And so it did give me compassion and understanding to see why and how he could have done this and learned how to do this and learned how to cope and not deal with his feelings. So there I had some compassion for him. And then he learned empathy for me and my hurt and my pain. And the wonderful thing with our therapist is she taught us that comfort circle from Mylan and Kate Yorkovich's book, How We Love. And that was like the most key to our healing, because we learned emotional intimacy, you know, that intimacy. He learned to get curious and to ask me, what was that like when I left you on Mother's Day, a mom of 6 kids? And I, you know, you had to hold that bag, so to speak, and I would just, you know, vomit it all out. And there was no excusing or minimizing or defending. He, you know, she was there to keep him accountable on that. And he learned to look into my eyes and feel my pain and not fix me, right, like our men want to do, not fix me, just and not go into that shame place, but just how it made me feel. And just to get curious and ask me and let me just get it all out. And I learned to even hold that once a week. So as much as I wanted to just all day long call him and have this trigger, that trigger, I learned to have special, you know, we had special times that we would, once we started to learn it together, then we started to do it at the beach alone, walking. And he would just ask me, how's your heart today? And what's going on? And what's hurting you? And I would just let it all out. And he started to hold it. And I would say become, you know, emotionally mature or, you know, emotionally intelligent. And it was, again, a beautiful thing because he was able to hold that pain and be safe. Now he's like becoming safe from a man that was not safe. Now, mind you, if I could I want to say, you know, truth. I had to get the truth, you know, and I'm all about therapeutic disclosures and polygraph. You know, we need our truth. So this was all like right after I got my truth.
Well, and that makes so much sense. Now, again, the name of that book, The Author and the Exercise, What are they again?
Mylan and Kay Yorkovich. How We Love.
Okay.
And it's all about attachment styles, but then they have a section in there that's the comfort circle. And I know a lot of therapists do use that. And I think they have a newly revised version of it. And it's just, I mean, we were able to meet the authors once, and we shared with them how, you know, the book isn't about sexual betrayal. It's more about a marriage and how they themselves were stuck in their marriage and had to unpack, like he kind of describes it as, you know, a different, like, cars on a train, you know, one by one by one, you know, they realized they were, like, avoidant attachment. Like, I was a pleaser. My husband's a vacillator. He comes in and he goes out because he has that fear of abandonment, things like that. And it just understanding each other and that intimacy and being known and vulnerable and accepted on both ends, again, was just such a big part of our healing. And then, of course, he had his men's group where he is being authentic and vulnerable with them. And, you know, most of our guys, I know you would say this because you work with the addicts, have never had authentic connection with other men. And that was a huge, huge piece.
Well, absolutely. As well as I love the fact that you said in doing that conference circle, I mean, exercise, he would look into your eyes. You would look into his. I know that I always ask when clients are doing check-ins with each other, that they touch knees to knees, if she will allow for it, because you need that emotional and physical connection at the same time. I'm a big believer in empathy statements, and I wondered, because you said together you worked on empathy, and he really got good at that. Can you explain to our listening audience what you believe empathy is and how he practiced that?
Well, I think it's, you know, really not, this is my statement lately because it's just been a common theme, getting off his island, get it, island, of, you know, himself and that shame and just, you know, I don't feel like doing this and I don't want to hear her pain and I'm not comfortable with pain, right? I mean, I'm not comfortable. This is someone who's never been comfortable or safe to share his feelings or have feelings. Every time a dad was gone and then he had a new dad. And I mean, he just learned to shove it down. So here he is learning to empathize with me and put himself in my shoes or my heart, shall I say, and listen and actually imagine what I'm feeling. And there were even times that I said, can you imagine if I blank, you know, and then would say something that he had done to me. And it would hit him like, wow, I never looked at it that way. I don't think I could have handled it, Karen. I don't know how you're handling this because I couldn't do it. So he actually began to sit with me in the pain and not fix me, but just be there and touch, like you said, and non-sexual touch, mind you, and, you know, and just hear my heart and connect in that emotional connection, and that brings safety. When a man can do that without expecting anything other than just wanting to hear my heart and validate and support, and again, no excusing, no defending, no but, you know, it's like, no, wow, I can see how you'd feel that way. What else? Wow, describe that for me. I didn't realize that you felt that way. I never looked at it that way. I could only imagine what that was like for you. And that
and
was just,
that,
yeah.
Well, and I love that sentence that, you know, he'd say, what's on your heart? Or, you know, when you're looking at the person that you love and you're wanting that closeness, it is important to look at those things inside of us that really matter, and your heart mattered to him. Now, I'm going to ask you, you know, obviously your journey was a lengthy one. I mean, if I understand you correctly, he shared with you his issues. He ended up leaving. He came back. He shared with you more issues. The two of you were in your own individual counseling. You did couples work. How long did your journey take before you felt that you two were on solid ground?
I mean, it's kind of, there's like different timelines for us, for me, because there was this, you know, the years before he left, and then there was when he left, and then there was when he came back, but still lying. But once he came clean in truth, so, you know, like I would say, like when a woman gets her disclosure type of thing, or, you know, with a therapist, and she has her truth, right? Because how can we move forward if we don't even know what we're moving forward from, right? So that we like to call that, you know, that's our time is October 18th, 2011 was like when he came clean with everything. And mind you, a few months came by and like little things came out. But the big stuff was dumped that night, you know, and so we call that our beginning of our restoration. And that, I would say, solid ground, but still counseling a year later. 2 years.
Okay.
2 years we graduated counseling.
Wow. That's amazing. Because I always kind of cite it takes an addict 3 to 5 years typically to get in good recovery. And sometimes I say,
now mind you, he's still
in
his recovery group. He didn't quit
right.
that. You know what I mean? He still did that and men's groups and all kinds of things, but not the counseling. Mm-hmm.
And so then you decided to take your life to a larger purpose. Can you share with our listening audience how you ended up making a difference in the world of others?
Well, you know, both of my husband and I are people of faith, and so we were just, you know, we feel that God was a big part of our story, and we just felt so grateful. And again, my husband was just so, you know, he was so humble and so grateful that he had a second chance and that he recognized, I mean, we had, you know, daughter get married that second year, and he grabbed me before he walked her down this beautiful prairie out here in Texas, and he looked at me and he said, I thank you. Thank you for, you know, putting up with me, for forgiving me and for, you know, waiting on me. He recognized he wouldn't be there walking our daughter down today. And still, even today with our 5 grandbabies, I mean, he still all the time says, I wouldn't even have known these babies. So, but anyway, with that saying, I'm sorry, what was your question? Ah, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
Well, it was crazy because I ended up, it was just a fluke thing, and I ended up in some of these Facebook groups with people, 30 marriages, and I made a couple replies and shared some of my story for the first time. I mean, really, you know, and mind you, at that 2 years too, we also came out and told our friends everything, like all of them. So, you know, remember I said that I was like afraid to share, and there was all of that, and then we were in such a great place that my husband started sharing his story everywhere and every day of his life. I mean, he'd be talking to a subcontractor on the phone, and he would come home and tell me, I cried to the plumber secretary because I told her my story. And, you know, and so we just started to see that, wow, people are really needing encouragement out there, and there's a lot of people going through this. And in those Facebook groups, I started getting all of these messages. Like, it got to thousands. I couldn't believe it. And so it was just amazing. And guess who encouraged me to become a coach? My therapist. And I was like, wait, what's a betrayal trauma coach? And she explained it. She told me about APSATs, and I did APSATs before I became a coach. So that was how it all went down. I called Barbara with APSATs, and then I went to coaching school. And that has been the most amazing journey of my life. And my husband, you know, like I said, he's mentoring men as well and supports a group. And I love that he supports a group that's a little more unique. His is not just so much focused on sobriety sexually, but it's on helping her heal, basically. You know, like that empathy piece and that going toward her heart. And mind you, we still have our struggles. It, you know, it doesn't all just go away. We still have that, you know, he still hears by heart all of those things, but it's not always easy. It's not always welcomed, right? You might be tired,
right,
or you might be, you know, and we, you know, it's like I tell people, it's no easy road. It's not an easy road. It's a struggle.
But we both stay willing and we both stay vulnerable and we both, you know, fight the feelings. I mean, my husband, like I said, he learned to cope and shut down and run away and numb, you know, 50 years. So, of course, it's not going to be something that just, you know, immediately just changes with a snap of a finger. He still, you know, he still goes against that fear of intimacy and, you know, busyness could keep him, you know, keep him preoccupied and things like that. But that's also what's cool and what's beautiful, too, because he's honest and he's real and he's not afraid to share that with men. And mind you, too, I also wanted to add that, you know, he, all the passwords, like he rebuilt that trust. I mean, from, you know, passwords to, you know, having Life 360 app on his phone where I always, and that was his idea, where I always knew where he was at. And we, when I would have triggers and things, we have a code word. And he came up with it, and it was in the pocket. And I would be, like, panicking, having a trigger, and, you know, or feeling like he's not hearing me, or just something where we're in the middle of public, and I would just say, I need you to be in the pocket. And he would get that. Or something would come up, or name of the other woman, or something like that, and he would learn to grab my hand and look at me and know that we're going to talk about it later. Or if I can share one really cool short story, and this is what, this is exactly what, you know, listeners and partners, I hope and pray one day their, you know, their spouses are willing to do, because this is where so much healing came. Our daughter, our second daughter, was getting married out here in Texas on a beautiful, that one that I said he pulled me over and, you know, told me those things. And I had to go out through the town where he committed adultery. So it was, you know, I was kind of panicking and triggering and all that, you know, because I was, we were in California when all of that happened. So here I am coming out from my daughter's wedding, and I have to drive through this town. Well, my husband calls me and during that time, like on purpose, and said, I'm going to talk with you through this as you drive through the city. I want you to know you're not alone. I love you. I'm so sorry for the hurt I've caused you. He prayed with me, and he just was loving and gentle and understanding of the hurt that I was facing going through that town. I cried. I, you know, went through all my emotions and feelings, but I can tell you on the way back, he offered it up again, and I said, no, I am good. It just did so much for me just to have him care and notice and understand my feelings. So again, that's, you know, it's that empathy and that understanding. And then even when the wedding came, instead of him driving through that town, he drove all the way around, like an hour out of his way, because he said, I'm not setting foot through that town. But you want to talk about honor and starting to feel like, wow, he is really taking those steps toward a true healing and a man who is in truth and sobriety. And so it is possible. And I know there's people out there that think, oh, gosh, these guys will never change, or they're narcissistic or abusive. I mean, my husband was very abusive in that time because he was lying and cheating and blaming and gaslighting me and all of those things, right? But when a man chooses to get well and heal and in recovery and do the work, you know, he can learn to manage those emotions and you know, and just heal and deal with the emotions. I mean, don't you think a lot of this is a lack of not only intimacy but dealing with emotions? When a man, you know, doesn't feel good or has discomfort, he's going looking for sex instead of identifying his feelings and facing it and dealing with it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. As well as I just think, and I know that this is a stereotype and I don't mean it to be so, but this is my experience after 35 years of mental health therapy and coaching myself. I believe that men are just now beginning to learn relational skills. They just really don't have it. It's probably because they didn't bear children, but they don't have the skills that we innately have or that we have always wanted to learn, so we self-taught. And what I say about addicts in good recovery is that they're better than 95% of the men out there once they get their skills, they get their honesty, they stop their secrets, their gaslighting, the whole gamut, when they really get real and they practice what they've learned, they really are better than the majority of men out there who didn't have this problem to begin with.
Right. I so agree.
I so agree. And then again, on my end, our end as partners, I mean, we come out stronger, more self-aware. And even though we could, you know, identify our feelings better, I can tell you for me, I, you know, in that craziness, on that crazy train, I was all over the place. I couldn't manage my feelings because I was just a mess, right? But through the recovery work and healing, I learned to talk less but be very clear on what I needed. I've never looked at what I needed. I'm a mom of six kids. I just didn't ever, and most of the partners I work with are like, I've never even woke up and said, hey, what do I need today? Emotionally, we've never done that. So using our voice and, you know, and just giving ourselves grace and that self-care and all, and, you know, still today, if I have a struggle with my husband, like, I have no problem using my voice, respectfully telling him I disagree, that this makes me feel angry, or I using my boundaries, I'm not okay with that, or whatever. And it's just, it's so empowering to just speak it in love and just speak my truth. And I'll tell him, he knows that, and I've heard you say it a lot too. He knows my little, in fact, he says it too. I'll say, this is my truth, honey. You know, and then I, you know, I speak it. And then he also says, and this is my truth. So it's just, you know, we've learned some healthier coping skills. And mind you, I know we don't have too much time, but he did the same thing, but at Comfort Circle with each of our kids. We had a son who didn't talk to him for a year. And so after we got in a safe place, solid ground, like you were saying, he went to each kid one by one as they were ready. And he did the same thing. I want to hear the pain that I've caused you. I want to hear what it was like for you. And we're talking 10 years old to 25, three girls and three boys.
Wow. I know that is why you are such an inspiration, because truly your marriage has not just gone through partner and sexual betrayal, but you've gotten a divorce. I mean, you got separated. You learned how to live on your own. Some of the kids were estranged from him. I mean, this wasn't like the family was in denial and just welcomed him back with open arms. He had
Absolutely
to work
not.
And prove himself. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had to use that voice. I mean, I had to tell him on one Thanksgiving that it was just weeks after disclosure. But because my kids weren't in a place of trust, you know, and I couldn't trust him yet either, but I could see that he was broken. I had to tell him while we were grocery shopping for food that he can't come to Thanksgiving and things like that. It was very difficult because he was so hurt by that. He actually will tell you he almost acted out again that night because of his feelings, right? Because he didn't know what to do with those feelings of rejection. And it was so hard for me, but I knew in my heart, and I knew that I was speaking it in love and that I had to honor and protect my kids' hearts too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I so admire you for that. I tell all women, you know, when it comes to protecting the kids, you are absolutely responsible. We think of the man as being the protector, but it's really the woman based on her own ability and intuition to know how to do that best. So I can appreciate the fact that you allowed him to sit in his pain and work that out himself. And it sounds like really you two, although again, no marriage is perfect, really have a healthy relationship.
Yeah, and I mean, I just, well, my husband always says, you know, he had to break my heart to find his. And,
right.
You know, it's you know, that's an awful way, but I mean, it's kind of true. And yeah, I mean, he has his full heart. I could say, you know, what we thought our marriage like before looked real pretty on the outside. We had, you know, material things and we had what looked like the perfect family or whatever. But you know what? Today it's just, it's more beautiful and it's better because it's real and it's authentic and there's no fakeness about it. And we connect emotionally and he's a better father. And, you know, I've watched him take those steps. And I mean, when he shares, like, you know, we share at events and things, I mean, he'll be in tears and he'll have other people in tears, but people blown away because he is this man with his heart now, you know, and he'll be the first one to tell you that he was the most verbally abusive, neglectful, you know, man that, I mean, he was extremely verbally and emotionally abusive. And so, you know, I just, that's why we feel such a need to share that hope. And I know not every story is the same. All of our journeys are unique, you know, different and unique, but that there is hope when, of course, they are willing. And, you know, and then you've got a wife who's willing. And with that comes, you know, eventually forgiveness. And, you know, because that's something, you know, all of this stuff is a process, and the pain, processing the pain and the grief and the losses. I'm a big proponent of writing down losses, you know, with my partners. I mean, we can't get through our pain until we process some of those things and look at the losses, not to shame our husbands, but just, you know, it's important to work through all of that, because, you know, our life isn't going to be the same. But part of all of that that happens through that is that post-traumatic growth. And again, you know how I shared on the 18th, it was when I found out about everything. Every month on the 18th, still today, every month mm-hmm. that goes by on the 18th, we sit down together, we go to a coffee place or we go to dinner, we bring our journals, and we talk and we connect and we talk about our hearts and how we're doing and any struggles. And he'll hear my heart, or I'll hear his heart, or whatever. You know, we
wow.
stay in that place.
Well, thank
and
you.
And making new
so
memories,
much,
right?
Really.
You know, that's important too, is making the new memories out of the bad one. You know, the painful memories can be replaced.
Oh, absolutely. And they can be the foundation for making much better, healthier, happier memories. And you're an inspiration, as is your husband. Now, tell the listening audience how they can get a hold of you if they want your coaching services. What do they need to do?
You can just go to restored-hope.coach or Karen at restored-hope.coach. And all of my information is on the website. I have two websites because one's kind of like my testimony, and that's Redeeming Love. But both bring you, Redeeming Love and Restored Hope, bring you to the same place. So the coaching information is there, as is the, my whole story. And, yeah, I'd love to connect or talk or share, encourage any partners. And, again, I'm, like, so honored just, you know, to be able to facilitate groups of women and watch them get to a place, you know, of empowerment and healing and understand what they need for their emotional safety and use their voice and then find their tribe of, you know, other women encouraging one another. And I just... it just blows me away because, again, I didn't have some of that, and it's just so beautiful to watch these women, you know, in the toughest situations of their life, but yet, you know, there's laughing and there's connection and there's, you know, there's strength that is coming through and loving themselves again and living according to their values and their truth. And that just helps them, you know, with their marriage, if that, you know, if they're able to, you know, work on their marriage, then it's going to only make them stronger. And even in the worst case possible, when it's, you know, obviously the marriages don't always survive, but then they are empowered. I mean, I've got a partner now and she's just, you know, going through some tough, tough stuff, but she is strong and, you know, she gets truth from the girls and, you know, and just that, you know, she's validated and she knows, you know, she knows the real truth of what it's, you know, that it's not her fault. And that she was.
You got it.
And that, you know.
I could talk to you for another couple of hours, but we have got to end the show.
Okay.
So, again, on that website, is your last name listed?
I think so, yeah. It's Rellos, Karen Rellos, R-E-L-L-O-S.
That's what I thought. And so
I've got a Facebook page,
Instagram,
audience, all under that. I'm sorry, what?
Absolutely. And they can always go to APSATS.org, that's APSATS.org, and look for Karen Rellos, R-E-L-L-O-S, and contact her through the site, too. So, Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol. Awesome.
Right,
I'm so excited for the show.
All right, you
too.
All right.
Bye-bye. Talk to you later. Bye.
You too. Bye. So that is one inspiring woman. We can really appreciate everything that she's been through, and I hope she inspired you too. So as I say at the end of every show, you know, there'll only be one of you. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself, and we will catch you next week for more Betrayal Trauma Radio. We're your resource, and we're here for you.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.